immigrant harsh truth coming up. It doesn't matter how many countries you change, you carry the same nervous system. Harsh, but true. You carry the same nervous system. And it's upon us, it's our responsibility to understand it, learn it, and if required, if it's not working for you, rewire it.
Welcome to the Newcomers Podcast, people, where I explore what it means to be an immigrant with immigrants like myself. Today, I'm with Nikki Wag, who she's an educator in the public school system in Ontario. But I think she'll be educating us on something different today. She has this interesting Instagram channel. I'll link it in the show notes, where she talks about the immigrant experience in really interesting ways. And so today we'll explore that. Welcome to the Newcomers Podcast, Nikki.
Thank you, Dozy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
On your podcast.
No, I am. I should be the one who's thankful, honestly. Because I go to your page and I'm always like, gosh, how do I get this reach to more people? You know, and I'll kick off already with the first question, which I had for you, which is, you talk a lot about representation and what it means for the immigrant and those who are coming, you know, after us. Because I feel like that topic is one, it feels like it just flies over people's heads. You know, it's people don't understand what it means when you're the first or when you have to do the work of opening the door for other people.
Okay. Let's first start with the theory. I love that. I love setting the framework and then we apply it. Educated to the bone. Stuart Hall is a social theorist who talks about theory of representation. Now, this representation is in media, it's in language, it's in culture, it's just in life. And what we see, who we see, whose voices we hear, right? Now, when only one type of people, one type of language, one type of voice and colors are represented, we might not see ourselves in that reality. And you know, that's the thing about representation. It constructs reality. It's not something like, hey, this is how life is. The more we see people who are like us, the more it becomes real, the more it becomes the truth of the daily life. Now, applying this concept to immigrant life, I'll speak about when I arrived here, and that was almost a decade ago. I see more people like me now. But when I arrived, it was on a lesser number in terms of the jobs that they're doing, in terms of just about the daily life. And when you say, hey, I'm not seeing so many people. And I'm seeing people who don't look like me or who don't sound like me. Out of the blue, without me even realizing, I might just marginalize me. I might just put me out of the mainstream because I don't see myself there. That is power of representation because I don't see myself represented well. So I'm not going to take any political names, but when we see people of color represented well in media, that just opens up a new door for us. Like, hey, someone walking my walk, someone who shares a life like mine can do something like that. That's powerful. You know, that's very powerful. If you've never seen that happen, out of the blue, you see that happen and you're like, oh, I didn't even know I could do something like this. Well, I didn't know that because nobody before me did that. Now that is still media. Think about being the first. I'll talk about myself. I'm the first person. I'm the eldest daughter, the eldest niece, the eldest granddaughter, the eldest, almost the first kid of the family and extended family, right? And when you're the first person probably to graduate,
yeah.
Right. You're the first person to get a white collar job. right? You're the first person to probably even buy a house. You're the first person to fly out of the country or take an international trip or probably get a job abroad. You're the first person to change your passport. You're the first person to buy a house somewhere that's not your motherland. So all of these firsts. Now, you're just applying the theory of representation here, where you're the first person doing that in your family, in your extended family. And you become, of course, you become that cousin. You're like, you know, be like that. I come from that culture. I'm aware of that. But sticking to the facts, the theory of representation, where when you're the first person, well, it's tough, but also you're making history in that moment. And then it becomes more accessible, even mentally, it becomes more accessible. Hey, she did that, or he did that, or they did that. And well, probably I can do that. Nobody in my family did it. I never thought I could do something like this, but I've seen people do that. And now out of the blue, it just becomes, all of a sudden, it becomes accessible. That's the power of representation. You're representing. You're representing your people. You're representing. You're becoming, I wouldn't say you're becoming their voice. You're amplifying their voice. Because everyone has a voice.
I like that, actually. That's a really good, I wanted to say, maybe I should say it that way. I think it's a trap some of us fall into, in the sense that you think you've become the voice. And then that leads you down a very ego-driven path.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You don't become anybody's voice. You just amplify
the voice, actually. That's what you do.
That understanding is very important. Everyone has a voice. And that's the thing about power and race, right? Not all voices are heard, but, well, everyone has a voice. And because I said not all voices are heard, it's because the power that you have inherited through just your being, that's privilege. That's privilege right then. That's something, and it's not just from an immigrant POV, it's wherever you are. Yes. That's something I will be covering in the next couple of weeks. That's why it's so
top of mind right now.
Yeah, it's very much at the top of my mind, but that's something I'm working on. But yeah, and I digress just to.
That's put okay. It no,
I digress.
I was gonna ask a question. And how does this feed into integration, multiculturalism? How does this feed into when people say, "Oh, we think we are being replaced"? Because like. That place is somewhere I'm always very interested in. How do you balance between representation and when someone starts to say, oh, we're being replaced and we think that we don't exist anymore, these folks, how do you handle that with integration itself or multiculturalism?
Okay. Now there are many layers to this question. Okay. First, let's talk about integration. What is that?
Yeah.
Now, there is this theory called as acculturation theory, okay?
Yeah.
And this acculturation theory talks about when different cultures meet, what happens, right? Either we accept that culture as is, and that would be assimilation. We completely forget our roots, and that would be assimilation. It works well for a time. It carries its weight because, well, you are constantly trying to I wouldn't even use the word adapt. You're constantly trying to copy something and the entire culture just to fit in. That's heavy. That's very heavy as an immigrant, that weight to carry. Then in this theory comes something called as separation. You completely separate yourself. Like, hey, that's different culture. And this is my culture. And we are not going to mix. It's like oil and water. Mm-hmm. We're not mixing at all. Okay. I'm holding on to my original culture and completely rejecting the new one. And that also in the long run isn't very healthy because, well, you are immersed in a new culture, yeah. Right? And you have to make a life here. I'm not saying you have to adapt. I'm saying you have to make a life here because by virtue, you are present there. Then comes something called as you're trying so hard. You're trying so hard that you feel disconnected from your own culture and from the new culture. And there's a word for that. That's marginalization in this acculturation theory. You feel so disconnected that, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. And everything is just so foreign at this point. And again, this isn't very healthy either. Which brings us to the last point, integration. Integration is a hybrid approach where you take what works for you and you keep what works for you. It may sound, an opposing view would be, it may sound that, hey, that's very selfish. Absolutely not. It's survival of the fittest at the end of the day.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not like you're trying to fit in. It's like you're trying to survive and eventually adapt to whatever new culture that has emerged. And when I say culture, I mean personal culture. What works with you, what you have carried with you, of course, never forgetting your roots, but also spreading your wings in that new culture. That is integration in the acculturation theory. Keeping best of both worlds, honoring your roots, but also soaring high up in the sky. That's how I look at it, at least. And that would be integration. Now, coming to your point where you asked about...
How representation and multiculturalism and integration, how they all come together. You know, when people say, we're being replaced.
Being replaced. Well, yeah. Now, the way I look at it is when any country is bringing in skilled labor, right? They're not replacing. They're filling a gap that already exists. They're filling a gap through the skills that they bring, skills in terms of the credentials that they've earned, in terms of the experience that they've gained. They're not replacing anybody. They're filling in a gap which very much exists. And that's why they're here. They're not replacing anybody, is what I think. And honestly, it's just not what I think. It's also what data tells us. This is not just my opinion, to be honest. But yes, I also understand when people who've lived in one place for a very long time, and I also understand the resentment and the emotional outburst, the intense emotions that they may have, like, hey, we are being replaced, or hey, I absolutely dislike this statement, but immigrants are taking up our jobs. Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. But, well, these statements come from a place of deep insecurity. Deep, deep insecurity. Because, well, if you worked very hard, you've earned your credentials, you've done that work, why are you worried about? Isn't it? Why are you worried about somebody who may or may not know the language, may or may not know the culture, may or may not know the norms of this place? Why are you worried about somebody who's coming from a very different place? And believe me, when someone's lived in one place for a very long time, you have cultural advantage. You have social advantage. Yep. You have network advantage. You have so many advantages. And if you still think that someone is going to come and replace you, well, that's some deep insecurity. What can I say? That's some deep insecurity. I don't know what else to say. And yes, the theory is talking about the scapegoat theory, where someone with less power, you just go ahead and blame them. Someone who's new, someone who has probably lived lesser in that particular society than you have. Well, you realize you have that privilege. You realize you have that cultural dominance, isn't it? So that's just scapegoat theory right there. I talk about that too on my IG profile. And well, honestly, when I met with, when we were celebrating Diwali last year, I met with my friends, my chosen family in the city, and everyone, almost everyone that I met was talking, and this is over quite a few people. Diwali is, well, it's a big festival, right?
Yeah.
For South Asians, for Indians, who celebrate it. And everyone was just talking about that, being replaced, being, you know, I like I said, I dislike that statement, but immigrants are taking our job. And I'm like, yes, immigrants are taking your job with their degrees and with their experience.
You know, you're troublemaker, gosh.
With the degrees and experience, what can I say? It's not like I can be spicy, but I'm not going to be.
I'm biting my words here. I'm tempted to ask you to be spicy, but I will respect that. Oh, the other question I was going to ask you around that, and you talked a bit about it, was when you talked about the marginalization part of the acculturation theory, I was thinking about something I say all the time, and this is me just trying to expand on what I know and see how I can adjust the theories I build in my head about the immigrant experience. I call immigrants the in-betweeners. I'm literally writing a video series on that, like a series that I want to shoot at some point on that. So it's called I call immigrants the in-betweeners because, like, for me now, I've lived in Canada for 5 years. And I find that I think I am trying to integrate. But I find that to some extent, when I think about myself and I love people and from the conversations I've had, why I call us in-betweeners is because if I go back to Nigeria, I'm never fully Nigerian anymore. Come to Canada, I'm never fully Canadian, really.
No,
so I'm just somewhere in between both cultures. And I'm wondering, is that marginalization or is that integration? Like, what is that? Or what is that thing? Because I don't know, like, you just feel like you're coasting.
Great question. Marginalization is feeling disconnected and not embracing anything.
Oh, I see.
Just feeling, it's a feeling of being lost. Integration, on the other hand, I would ask you this question. I know that's your podcast, but I'm going to ask you this question.
Sure, please do.
To distinguish, integration would be, are you accepting things from both the cultures and moving forward?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
That's integration right there.
I believe so. Yeah.
That's integration right there. And honestly, what you said, that's one of the hard truths of being an immigrant, I think. Where integration, I think that's the cost you pay with integration. You're accepting parts of both cultures, making it work in a new place. But nobody actually tells us. The sad part of being an immigrant here is nobody actually tells us you're never going to feel home anywhere.
Yes. Gosh.
You know, like you're never going to feel home anywhere. It's real. It's real. There are times... Well, like, to give you real life examples, I'm an Indian, part hyphenated identity, Indian, Indo-Canadian, right? I'm an Indian. I love spicy food, but the Canadian part of me has an upper threshold. Believe me, the Indian in me judges all the time. Like, that's it? You cannot? I'm like, no, I cannot. Physically, I cannot. It hurts. But that's the thing. Just to give you a humorous example of integration, like, you know, for the weather here, for just the life here, and also for the ease, because you don't have a village. You don't have, to speak the harsh truth, the labor's exploited, right? So I'm going to be very politically right on your podcast. I'm a very spicy person in real life. But the point is, you're doing everything by yourself. You don't have a village here. And you're integrating. You're accepting things from both the cultures moving forward. Well, there's a cost that you're going to pay for it, isn't it?
Yeah, Yeah, it's a big point.
I don't use that many spices in my, just to bounce off from that same example. Sandwiches every day. Yes, welcome. Yes. Over the weekends, we will indulge in our heritage foods, in our family recipes, but that's not something when I'm working a 9-to-5, or honestly, I'm an educator. My lectures are sometimes in the evening, sometimes early morning. And it changes every 4 months. I have a new schedule. So I have to fit all of that in this life. And I'm going to borrow ideas from this culture that's going to make my life livable here.
Yeah.
It's important, right?
I think the other thing when you're talking about it, and this is a very sad one, is as you explained it, I thought about the fact that, so like, I've lost both of my parents. And I'm at that, I mean, for me, I always say that it happened too early for my liking. Like, they left too early. But it breaks me because, like, I just lost another woman who was like a mom to me some weeks ago.
Oh,
and, you know,
you start to realize
how the world you knew before is going away. So I am here. I'm Nigerian Canadian, but I'm somewhere in between. But all the pillars that existed for me back home are all dying away. Like, every single thing I knew as a child growing up and people I looked up to, they're just going away. And so at some point, I'm just going to be standing and you are literally just alone.
I know.
And your Canadian side does exist. But the Nigerian side is now just a memory, because literally you've grown up and the cycle of life has happened, and all
your
anchors are gone. So all your anchors don't exist anymore. And like, I'm somewhere there, like my home, like my parents are no more. So I don't have that parental anchor anymore. And I look back at the home and house and it breaks me. Like, some days I'm driving, I just start to cry because I'm just like,
it's a weight you're carrying.
I'm like, what is this? Like, why? One day I asked God, like, why would you do this to me? Like, how would you take them so early from me? I need them right now, because literally I'm trying to figure out my life in this country and they are no more. And so I'm just trying to do it myself, and I'm just going, and I look back home, it's like, okay, yeah, gone.
Yeah.
And so what are you talking about?
And you're changing. And you're changing in this new culture.
Yeah, and it's scary because you don't know who you are anymore.
Yes. 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 That's very real. That's another hard truth, I think, about being an immigrant. Because and this is something even I resonate with. Since I moved here, I haven't visited a lot back home. I haven't, because, well, trying to build life here.
Yeah.
Right. And the more time I spend here, the less, I wouldn't say the less connected I feel, but I'm becoming this in-between self. And as you said, when you're going back home, having those pillars, having those anchors is important, because it I wouldn't say it helps you switch back, but that's your familiar self.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you quickly
connect with that familiarity.
Yeah.
And now, when you don't have those people there, right? You don't have your familiar faces, those voices, those fragrances, and you're in this in-between self. It's kind of confusing.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's very confusing. And not many people can even connect with that, because not many people, now think about it, not many immigrants have this exact same experience that you're talking about. So not many immigrants can actually understand what you're saying or from where you come. And they're like, no, we don't get dozy. What are you saying? No, I just went back home and I had this 5-course meal. What are you talking about? I was hanging out with my 40-odd extensive family. I don't know what you're talking about. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get it, because, it's a weight. It's a pain. And not many people will get it because, well, you're in the process of integration. You are accepting two different identities at once. I have a kid. Okay. I say human kid because I have two dogs and they're my kids too. I have one human kid and, I keep wondering, I at least spent time in that country. I have my physical anchors, you know, the people I love. They might say the goodbyes, but I have that place where I grew up. I have my school and the street and, you know, but for my child, who's a part of the diaspora, fancy word, diaspora people who've immigrated, left their home places, and now the generations are growing in a very different land. Member of diasporas. You and I, we are members of diaspora. Yeah. Our kids are members of diaspora. And I keep wondering, Dosie, that my child, for her, it's just one hyphenated identity based off of how she looks. She's not lived there. I don't know if she will live there or how often we will go there. Because, well, we have commitments here. We have a whole life here. We need to get vacation and arrange care for our my two dogs. You know, so many things to arrange to fly back. And I keep wondering, what will be her anchors? And this is one of the harsh immigrant truths too.
Yeah.
Because the way I know my motherland, my birth country, is not the way my child will know my mother country, my home country. I still call it my home country. But it'll always be, isn't it? In spirit.
Yeah, it will always be. It will never, we left too late for us to call it something else. And you know, what you just raised now is another part of a story I wrote for CBC. It's going live on Monday.
Ooh.
About, I called it Unborrowed Ancestors. So it was about Black History Month and how, for me, I am Black because I'm Nigerian.
Mm-hmm.
But when I come here, the system doesn't care that I'm Nigerian and I don't have the history of the people who celebrate Black History Month. So I celebrate Black History Month, but I'm borrowing that. I mean, in a way, I can celebrate it, but there's an ancestral thing that I borrow because I am the same color, not really the same history. And it's the same thing with your daughter and my kids in the sense that they will always be seen as that Nigerian, but they don't have that. Like, The ancestral lineage is a bit better than my story, but is that because their dad is Nigerian, so they have that. But they don't have all the anchors I have. But they will be judged and expected to understand and live by, to explain those things to people. It's such a...
Very much so. I believe me, I worry about this so much. I use the word worry loosely, but I do worry about it because I keep wondering, my daughter, the way she speaks, the way she goes about her life, it's very Canadian. She loves cold. She loves the snow. She'll play in snow for hours. I mean, just, you know, to touch upon humor, but really she's so different than who I am. But boy, she looks like me. She looks like me. So the way the world, the systems, the way they're going to go about dealing with her are going to be as, hey, she's a woman of color. She's a brown South Asian.
Yeah.
That's what she looks like. And, well, that's why, as immigrants, I believe our awareness of systems, understanding, hey, this is how we label a microaggression. Hey, this is a dominant gaze. This is the system we operate in. You know, it's very important understanding these labels, understanding the world we have already entered and we are trying to survive and make a life. But hey, you know what? My battles don't need to be my child's battles.
Yeah.
And that's why it's upon me. It's my responsibility as an immigrant, as a woman of color, to understand, hey, how do I label all this? What is this world? How is it operating? Yes, it's, I get very emotionally charged, the mother that I have become. But, you know, emotions aside, I need to know this world for my daughter. Because, well, she's going to operate in it tomorrow. When I am going to pass on the baton to her, isn't it? And she might not know what it is to be an Indian. She might not know the way I know what it is to be a South Asian, to live in that country and in that tropical weather and eat the food that I ate, you know, and navigate the system that I navigated. But, well, she will still be stereotyped.
Yeah.
Heavy word, but she will, let's just go back. She will still be seen as.
You're being nice with that now. Hyphenated. It is just what it is.
It is what it is. I know. See?
You're just being nice. It is what it is. It's just what it is. It is.
That's why.
It is a stereotype.
Honestly, yeah. That's the reason why I started with that profile, because, I did not mention this, but I'm also a student at University of Ottawa, and that's how I got into studying all these different theories. And out of the blue, I do a completely different research as a student, but this happened. I got into studying social theories just for healing as an immigrant. I'm like, hey, this makes sense. This is what I felt, you know, that's why I was performing so much. That's why I wanted to achieve so much, because as an immigrant, I don't have the option, you know, I have to, it's like survive or perish, you know, get that job or you're not going to go forward, you know. So all of that, I started journaling and I started labeling, and I'm like, it makes so much sense. The parts of me that started healing as an immigrant and becoming my very authentic self. And that's how that's when I started posting. And I'm like, you know what? That's another level of healing, because you're talking about it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And now that you mentioned that, we'll just go to the next question, which is like the next theme, which is that thing you talk about achieving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, as that blessing and curse, like, you know how, oh, you have to be a high achiever as an immigrant, the perfect immigrant, the myth of the perfect immigrant.
Because think about it, as an immigrant, first, even to stand out, you have to be the best, isn't it? Every person that I have met, the job that they have, they are, well, they have maybe 10 experiences or a couple of more credentials. That's when they get picked. So you have to, this is a very collective experience that immigrants share. I'm not saying this out of my own bias. I'm not saying this out of my one isolated experience. No, absolutely not. We have to be a high achiever, because that's the system we operate in. Number one. There is a dominant gaze. How much ever, and no, this is not a victim mentality. Let me just put it out there to your listeners. I'm not victimizing us. Absolutely not. I'm talking about reality. That's the world we live in. There is a dominant gaze. There is a critical race. And if we are not aware of it, we'll never know the system we are operating in. And because that's the system we are operating in, we don't have other option but to be a high achiever. And of course, there's that internal pressure, all the sacrifices that our family has done. And no, I say this with respect. We have that internal pressure. I have to perform. It's perform or perish. It's perform or lose everything, isn't it? There's financial pressure there.
Yeah.
And there's that identity pressure coming up, like, oh, I have to be this way because, well, another concept of dominant culture coming in. That's the way professionalism is viewed, right?
Yeah.
I remember in my very early years, I would always straighten my hair. And this is me getting very vulnerable at this point. I love my curly hair. I embrace the way I am. But I remember just to attend interviews, I would fit a certain mold. And well, because I wanted to be, my resume read like, hey, she has achieved so many things, but there's so many times just, I don't know, things just didn't work out. But honestly, now I have a label for that. That's the system we are operating in. And that is critical race theory right there. Why my name sometimes could be overlooked. Sometimes I could be overlooked. That's the system we are operating. So yes, we have to be a high achiever, which brings its own wounds.
Yes.
Yes, I'm very dramatic, Dozy.
You should go act. You should go act.
Oh, no, why? That's all. No.
Why? The moment, why? No. Why do we do act?
I'm a very dramatic person. But that's the thing. I cannot act on cue. I cannot do that.
But then you go to improv. Improv is actually amazing, honestly. Because they're it? Like, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Because you just go. You just go. Like, there's no cue. The only cue is what I said the last time.
I've never actually tried improv, but you know what? I'm going to take that suggestion.
Yeah, you should go try an improv class. It's pretty interesting.
But acting, I cannot. To save my life, I cannot act. Even lying, I just cannot. Like,
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised,
all
actually.
My friends and family know that, you know, if you want to get something across, you should not tell Nikki if she has to lie. Because her face, her expression will give us away. Because she's going to try to add something to hide, but everyone will know what's up with her. Why is her face like that? Oh, she's trying to hide something. Anyway, I digress. Coming back to, well, this pressure to perform is kind of our daily normal as an immigrant. We don't realize it, but we are carrying that weight. Students, international students have the student loans. People who have immigrated through other pathways, they might have debt that they have carried from just to make a life in a new country. So you don't have the cushion. You don't have the cushion. You don't have plan Bs. You have one plan to, hey, I have to go. I have to get a job. I have to. There is no plan B. And yes, we pay through our emotional burnout, the mental health costs. We pay through all of this. We don't realize it because, well, we are trying to make a life. And well, some of us come by ourselves, but some of us also bring our family. And that's an added layer. I'm not saying that's a burden. Absolutely not. But that's a pressure that we carry on us. Like, hey, I have to provide. I have to do well. There is no plan. There's no option. There's no plan B. So high achiever syndrome is something that every immigrant carries. We have it in us. We cannot give ourselves another option because there is no option. The system is not going to, and when I say system, I do not mean immigration system. I mean,
yeah, I get what you're saying,
just
yeah.
The system, the society that we are operating in, just to be clear. And that does create wounds, like always being hypervigilant, always being vigilant. The moment you enter a space, who are the people there? What's happening? What are they chatting about? Do I understand that conversation? Do I understand the cultural connection? Am I speaking right? Am I dressed right for the event? There are so many thoughts that go through every immigrant's mind. And so many times I remember thinking, and probably I'm an overthinker. Probably, you know, it's just me. But you know, the more I started speaking with people and sharing these experiences, the more I realized, hey, it's not just me. It's probably all of us. Everyone to their level, to their experience, are having all these questions and thoughts, and they are constantly getting aware, constantly being aware in different settings. And well, because they have to be. One mistake is going to cost them quite a bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes probably equating them to a very, very exaggerated stereotype. Isn't it? So
is there no way to deal with that?
Yes, I have covered that extensively, but the first step is always to become aware. That's how I started my own healing journey and journaled it and then posted it on social media, spoke about it. But the first point is becoming aware. How am I going about my daily life? What are my fears? What actually stresses me out? Where do I feel it in my body? Is it on my shoulders? Is it deep in my chest? Or is it a pit in my stomach? When I walk into a room, where do I feel that in my body? It's important because honestly, someone could talk about it for hours. Okay. And believe me, I've done that. I've heard it and I'm like, ooh, this sounds so good. It's amazing. Yes, that's me. Yes, that's me. But the point is, yes, that's me. Correct. But you know what? You have to do your own work. You have to become aware. You have to observe, hey, this is the part of me that's getting activated in this particular setting. And you are the one who has to have that dialogue. You are the one who has to pause because immigrant harsh truth coming up. It doesn't matter how many countries you change. You carry the same nervous system.
True.
Harsh.
But true.
You carry the same nervous system.
Yeah.
And it's upon us
to fix it.
It's our responsibility to understand it, learn it, and if required, if it's not working for you, rewire it. That's something I learned. And yes, I could keep beating the drum of, oh, the system and this and that. But at the end of the day, well, I'm operating the way my nervous system is firing. And yes, there are the external factors, but I have to heal myself. I have to do that. I have to become aware. I have to understand, hey, do I feel insecure? Do I feel small? Do I feel invisible? And if I'm feeling that, I have to understand what can I do to, I wouldn't say not feel it, but what can I do to get that conversation inside me started? It's very important.
Yeah. This is really good. Yeah. This is really good because I feel like it is a good frame because I talk about this in a way too, but I feel like I talk about one of the symptoms itself. So I tell people when people ask me, hey, what do I do? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what do I do to get better? I'm like, stop feeling like a victim.
Oh,
like, yeah.
Yes.
You just like stop doing that to yourself. Like, you always have a choice. No matter how crazy it sounds, you have some choice in there. You just need to sit down and think about.
It's always agency.
It's always agency. You stop giving your agency to someone. Oh, they were racist to you. That's on them, not on you. You said how you reacted. I control myself. You don't control me.
Yeah.
But I feel like this thing you just described now is that being feeling like a victim is a symptom of you not understanding your nervous system and working on rewiring it. I feel like that's what you just described right now.
Very much. Not understanding the power you hold. You hold a lot of power. Every one of us, we have a lot of power because if we become aware of it, we decide how we go about in the world. And I don't mean your home country, your host country, any place, but how we respond to it, not react. There's a difference.
Yes, yes, big
how
difference.
How you respond to it makes all the difference. And that victim mindset that you just pointed out, it's very important. Otherwise, people could just keep saying like, hey, life is happening to me. There, you see this on social media. You float. This message floats a lot on social media.
Yeah.
Life is happening to me. But honestly, harsh truth again, life is responding to you. And no, this is not me victim blaming. Absolutely not. If you actually understand your power, and even at your weakest, you do have a choice. Either you're going to be crushed by the wall, or you're going to use that same wall to push yourself back. And that resilience is very much in immigrants.
Yes.
That resilience, there's a resilience theory that I talk about on my social channel also. It's in everyday moments. It's finding some kind of stability. It's finding some kind of permanence, creating that seeing that same friendly face every day or connecting with your coworker, understanding a little more about the culture and feeling a little more connected. But that's resilience. And that's in each one of us. It presents itself differently, but there is one common thread. We are trying to find some kind of permanence, but it shows up in everyday moment. There's so many times people say, as an immigrant, you're so lucky. Whenever I speak with somebody back home, you're lucky. You have a life there. You do this and you're lucky. You're lucky. You're lucky. No, I'm not lucky. Come live in this minus 25 degrees and you'll see what luck is. That's not lucky. That's a lot of hard work. You're completely erasing it when you say I'm lucky.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of resilience. That's a lot of determination to stick to the choices I made. That's a lot of work, not just professionally that I'm doing. It's also internally that I'm doing, and that nobody sees. That's another harsh reality of immigrants. Not everybody can understand the work we do. It's a lot of work that we do. It's internal, very much internal, but it's a lot of work we do. And because they don't see that, it's sometimes called as you're just lucky. It's easy to say it. It's easy to say it, and it completely removes, it discounts the work that person has done. And I have a problem with that.
Me too.
I have a problem with many things, but this, yes.
Yeah, me too,
I have a
actually.
Problem with that. You cannot discount somebody's work by just saying you're lucky.
Yeah.
They work for it. They plan for it. They might have decided how to go about the visa situation, how to think about the finances, the everyday, where to find housing, how to go about finding for that job, how to customize that resume, preparing for that interview. Is that luck? No, that's hard work. That's a lot of research. That's resilience. And that's also quieting the little doubts that creep up in your mind.
Yeah.
They do, because you're lonely. That's another reality of an immigrant. You're lonely here. You're by yourself. Some people have their family, but still, you're by yourself.
It's not enough.
It's not enough. Because especially coming from a very collectivist culture,
yeah.
I'll speak for myself, coming from a collectivist culture where your next door neighbor could bring you food on a bad day to a country that's, well, it's a very different culture. It's very individualistic. And I don't say it in a negative way. It's just what it is. I keep saying this even in my classes when we are studying culture. There's nothing positive or negative. It's when we start labeling positive or negative, we don't learn. We are wearing judgmental glasses then.
Yes.
But if you want to learn, you just observe, hey, this is collectivism. This is what works in this culture. And this is individualistic. And this is what works in this culture. And if we learn to observe the qualities, well, we learn how to adapt in that.
Yeah.
How to make it work for us. But if I sit and wear my judgmental glasses, oh, that's too individualistic, or oh, that's too collectivist and it's not going to work for me. I'm going to lose my identity in collectivist, or I'm going to just become very lonely and individualistic. Well, yes, you can have a problem with everything and you can sit and complain and beat your chest about everything. But the point is, if you want to move forward and you want to move forward with everyone, you have to understand the cultures and you have to make it work. And you cannot do it by judging it. You can do it by learning about it, getting curious. It's very important. And this is something that, as an immigrant, I have embraced. Just get curious. Why did that comment come across as off? What did I just say? Get curious. Did I say something that was in bad taste? What happened? Maybe I didn't understand it. It's okay. You just go and say, hey, I didn't understand the context of it, but I'm sorry. I realized, and I know I cannot take my words back, but I didn't understand the cultural context of it. And believe me, I've done that. I'm a yapper, Dozy. I'm a yapper. I say things and not always I understand them. Because it's a different culture. And
yeah.
I have apologized more times. And believe me, you go in any part of the world, you go with a clean heart, people will always embrace you.
Yeah.
True. They'll not remember your mistake. They'll remember like, hey, she could correct herself.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah.
Humans are humans everywhere.
Yeah. We're the same, actually. We're the same no matter where we go. You know, and this kind of leads to the last question I have for you before we get onto the book of questions, which is about building a village. Because it feels like you already started us talking about that, which is like basically just being curious. Because I think one of the hardest things for immigrants is rebuilding the village, which is like just rebuilding your community. Because people take it for granted. But is rebuilding that community, social capital, everything is hard.
And it's like, important. It's difficult. When... this village topic is so close to my heart, especially because postpartum and
oh gosh,
having absolutely nobody to walk that path with you but your partner, my husband. And,
it was same with us too.
He's in it too. So, you know, you really cannot lean on him because he's learning to be a father first time. I'm learning to be a mother first time. And, well, we don't have this community. But it's very important to build a village. Because there are so many things. I'll say there's so many things that you take for granted. If I could go back to myself back home in India, I would tell her, you know what? Everything that you're... your complaints are very valid, but also you have... If something goes wrong, there are like... I wouldn't say 10, but at least there are 5 people that you can call right now.
Gosh.
And they will indulge you. They will entertain you.
Gosh, tell me about it.
They might have an important meeting or something that's coming up, but they will listen to you. They will be hopping to that meeting, but they will listen to you. Yes, yes, Nikki, you know what? We'll catch up in the morning. We'll catch up in the evening over chai.
Oh, God.
Chai is tea. Not chai tea, chai. So it's important to build your village, but it's not easy. But something that as an immigrant that I learned on the go was don't have many expectations when you're going about. Connect over an interest, connect over a shared passion, maybe connect over a book, connect over some craft. I've met people through crochet circles. I crochet. Then knitting, crochet, yarn. I use yarn and I make crafts. And connect over some interest. Don't have many expectations like, hey, I'm meeting this person and this person's going to be my ride or die. No, we are all adults. Those kind of friendships can happen probably in high school or school. We are adults. We have busy lives. You're meeting over an interest. You connect over that and set a little goal for yourself. What am I doing out of? What am I doing with this time? I'm getting my social points in. It's important for our mental health, for our emotional health to connect. I'm doing that. I'm connecting with somebody who probably could have a very different life experience, but it's important. Because if I could go back to my early immigrant self, I'll tell her this. Don't try to find a best friend in every person you're meeting, because you're not going to find that. But try to find one quality that you can connect with in every person you meet. And you will grow that circle. Because trying to find best friend in every person you're meeting, well, that's a tall order.
Not I mean, you can't be best friends with everyone. People don't even think you're their best friend. Like, not everyone that meets you will be like, oh, does he can be my best friend? So why do you expect that of other people?
Exactly. And sometimes I think as an immigrant, that becomes an obstacle in connecting with people. That, hey, I have this list and everyone should, you know, check mark every part. No, that's not happening. And the way I connected with people back home, if I have the same expectations, well, I'm going to be very disappointed and I am going to be lonely. Yeah. Well, how do I know all this? Because, well, I did that. I learned it the hard way. And I'm like, Nikki, that's not working for you. You've got to go out there, connect with people over interest. Probably I met people when I would go to dog parks. And believe me, I knew their dogs more than their names, yes. But interests. And one thing led to other. We became friends. We started meeting outside of dog parks. That did happen, very much happened. And I'm not talking, I just met one or two people. I did, when I was in Toronto, that was my whole friend circle. That was my village in a way, that I knew people in my neighborhood through the dogs, because that was the phase I was in, my dogs. Well, now we are in a different phase where we have a big backyard and we invite people over and my dogs meet their dog friends in the backyard while we stay inside the house. It's too cold, Josie. But moral of the story, something that I learned was connecting over interests.
Yeah.
Reducing the checklist to connect people.
Oh, yeah.
Not trying to find best friend in every person. It's not happening. Not trying to find the exact same homely relationships, friendships that you had back home in a completely new culture. And also not having that image, hey, this is how my friend should be. You never know who you're going to connect with.
Yeah.
And this has helped me expand my circle. And I don't mean just in terms of gender, in terms of age, in terms of life experiences, in terms of, well, just who they are. And you can connect with anybody and everybody. The point is, what are you looking in? What are you searching for in that person? And not having a tall order. So yes, to give you a short answer, as an immigrant, you can build your village. It is difficult because there's a lot of rewiring that has to happen. But it's possible. But until we do that, that loneliness is our best buddy. It's just going to sit. Sorry, I use humor to cope. You might have noticed that. I use humor to cope in life. Laugh, you know.
I believe that we should laugh more in this world.
Difficult topics are just difficult.
I believe we should laugh more.
You laugh and they're still difficult, but you're laughing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You're laughing.
Exactly.
That difficult is not going to change, but you can laugh and still go through that difficult.
Okay. So now let's do the book of questions. So you're supposed to pick a question from 1 to 291.
Okay. So what do I have to do?
Just pick a number and I'll ask you the question.
Ooh. Okay. 1.
Okay.
Straight. Yeah, let's see what's... So just okay. See what's... Are they connected questions or what?
No, they're random questions. No questions.
Oh. And what if I don't have an answer for it?
That's okay too.
Oh, okay. We could. Okay.
So 1,
right? That's right. Yep.
Let's go. Technology has become a part of us. Would you rather lose the use of all motorized vehicles, all telecommunication devices and computers, or one of your hands?
Oh, I would never lose my hand. Oh, it took me some time to understand what that question is. No ways. I would never want to lose my hand. No. Because technology changes. Today we are talking about cars. Tomorrow that a car could be driving me. You know, but my hand, no. Never my hand.
No. Oh, gosh.
I would never forego my hands.
No. Thank you so
and
much.
And also I crochet, Dosi. Come on. I crochet. There's so much fun.
I forgot that.
No, I crochet. So the point is, I need my hands because the satisfaction, the peace, the calm, the tranquility that you get from crochet.
Yeah, I know.
No technology is going to replace that. No.
I get. Thank you so much. Like, honestly.
I was like, good question. At least I had an answer for it.
Thank you so much. This has been a really beautiful conversation. Like, thank you. It really, really, like, I've learned a ton just having this chat with you.
Honestly, I was so anxious, like, because I'm this person. I'm constantly moving and yapping, and I'm just dramatic, you know. And I'm like,
oh,
I don't know what kind of expressions was it captured. Anyway, I was a little anxious about it, but I think we did well, Dozy. It was fun.
Oh gosh. Yeah, thank you.
It was fun.
Thank
you so much.
Oh no. Oh, I should thank you. Honestly, I should thank you. Everyone, and that's it. And that's the end of it all. As always, we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, everywhere you get a podcast, you can get this conversation with Nikki. I think it was a good one. It's a ton to learn there, a ton to think about, you know. So again, thank you very much.